Hey, everybody, Charlie Kirk here. Are you new to investing and have savings you need to protect right now? With the Middle East war, the Ukraine war, and maybe Taiwan soon, need a new playbook that is safe. Allocate some gold now and avoid the frenzied panic of the unprepared. When fear reigns, gold protects the wise. Noble Gold Investments offers a free 5-ounce America the Beautiful coin with new IRAs this month. Shield your savings with a Noble Gold Investments IRA. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com, noblegoldinvestments.com, the only gold company I trust. That is noblegoldinvestments.com. Hey, everybody. Happy Sunday. My conversation in Missouri, all about immigration. Why we need closed borders, less people coming into the country. I think you'll love it. Email us as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Subscribe to The Charlie Kirk Show and enjoy this advertiser-free episode. If you want to listen to all of our episodes advertiser-free, become a member at charliekirk.com. If we have impacted your life in any way, become a member at charliekirk.com. It helps out a lot. It's affordable for all income levels, charliekirk.com, and click on the members button. Help us out any way you can. Email us as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. That's freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Wow. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Wow. What a group. This is great. You know, that is not always the welcome I get on college campuses, I have to tell you. If you saw some of my recent visits, that's not the case. First, just want to say thank you to our amazing Turning Point USA chapter. They're doing such a great job and they're working so hard. Glad you heard from my friend Will Scharf. He's doing amazing. I'll tell you, he's one of the smartest legal minds out there on our show. Anyone watch our show? By the way, thank you, guys. Anytime I want a very strong legal opinion, I have Will Scharf come on, and he does a great job. I'm very, very happy that he's helping represent our president against that terrible witch hunt. He's doing a great job. So, Will, thank you for sharing some words. So, I'll talk for a little bit, and then we'll do some questions, which is honestly the most fun. I think that's why you're all here, right? To ask questions, and if you disagree, you can go to the front of the line, and we'll have some fun from there. We had 10 protesters outside. You guys can do much better than that in Springfield, Missouri, okay? Look, I want to be nice, but that was pathetic, okay? You got to send your leftists to Berkeley for a couple weeks to learn how to really protest, okay? You know how I know it's not a big deal? I walk on campus here, and they say, oh, yeah, there's really no police or all this. I said, wow, you know, this really is God's country, right? Because I got to be honest, that's a good sign. It really is. I'm so used to the SWAT teams and snipers on the roof and helicopters, and it's Missouri, so I think we got this handled, right? It's great. So a couple things I want to talk about. Yesterday we did our campus tour at University of Texas San Antonio, talked about how the media is trying to get us into World War III. It's inexcusable what the media did in the last couple of days, completely lying about what happened in Israel, taking Hamas's narrative of a hospital. Turns out the hospital was not bombed. They said 500 people died. Turns out 500 people didn't die, and Israel didn't do it. Everything about it was a lie, and it impacted our geopolitics. And one thing I want to talk about tonight, it's going to be the central part of my message, is immigration, because immigration is something that is obviously you become the country that you import. You become the country of the sum of the parts that you let into the nation. But I think many of us are looking what's happening domestically to the response of what happened in Israel as a reminder of how stupid and insane our immigration policies have been in this country. And one of the reasons, we're going to talk about this rather bluntly and plainly, because I think people are afraid to talk about this because they're afraid of being called a racist or a xenophobe. There's nothing racist or xenophobic about loving the country so much that you don't want people who hate your country to come into your country. That is about loving your nation. And when I see, I'll give you example after example after example, when I see members of Congress, not just fringe people, that are parroting terrorist talking points, when I see 31 student organizations at Harvard, days after Jews are butchered and slaughtered and killed, saying the most vile things, that's more than a foreign policy debate. We need to take responsibility as a nation and say, what the heck are we doing and letting into our own country? And I received a lot of backlash for this, and I'm not here to fearmonger. I'm not here to try to make people afraid. But it really makes me wonder, how many sleeper cells are in this country right now that we have let into America? And we're going to go through the numbers, because they're really unbelievable. And the left drives them nuts when you say this, that all men are created equal in the eyes of God, all men and women, but not all cultures are created equal. And to say that, you get attacked from every direction. But excuse me when I say that Western civilization is the best that humanity has produced, an outgrowth of the Bible, of the eternal truths that all men should be created with dignity. And if you come to this nation and you are at odds with that, that's a problem. And let's just take a couple people, for example. We could talk about the Harvard. We could talk about today. It's unbelievable. These young high school kids in San Francisco. Did you see this? They're marching through the streets in San Francisco. They chant, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, which is just code for genocide, just so we're clear, right? Basically saying we don't want the state of Israel to exist. Chanting through the streets of the high school. And those are kids that have been taught that behavior. But let's focus on one person in particular, because we must understand that our over-generosity and our benevolency and our charity has been taken advantage of. They took advantage of how big our hearts were. And one of those individuals that we must isolate and we must talk about is Ilhan Omar. Ilhan Omar was born in Somalia, in war-torn Somalia. She fled to a Kenyan refugee camp and was rescued by Americans and was able to come to our beautiful country. Grew up in Minneapolis, educated in American schools, and was raised in the American culture. Eventually runs for Congress, wins, and when she runs for Congress, her message is not one of gratitude, one of how amazing this country is, but her message is that this is a racist country, that we're systemically racist down to the bone. She's talking more about foreign adversaries than our own nation. And now, it's easy to pick on Ilhan Omar, and we should. She should be deported. She hates the country. She's a terrorist sympathizer. But we also must be very clear, though, because that's easy. Well, it's not easy, because our politicians should do that. But what is more important is, why did we allow that to happen? And that's the introspection that we need to have. And honestly, it's because people in both political parties, conservatives and liberals, they wanted mass immigration over the last 30 or 40 years. And I'm the first one to acknowledge, I used to be very naive on this topic. And we need to say that, wow, I used to think, you know, they come here and they'll assimilate and they'll learn the language and they'll start to adopt our culture. And some people do come to this country and they have that. But you look at Minneapolis and you look at what happens when you have 400, 500, 600,000 people. This is a question. Has America changed Ilhan Omar, or has Ilhan changed more of America? That's a serious question. And they're actually changing America more than America is changing them. And you must understand that when certain cultures come into conflict, for example, certain strains of Islam, it's more of a political ideology than a religious ideology. And we see this with Rashida Tlaib, who happens to be born here, but we'll get to her in a second. But Ilhan Omar, her first gut reaction after what happened in Israel is to side with the terrorists. And she's a card-carrying member of Congress. And no, I totally agree. And by the way, President Trump was right when he said, send them back to the country they came from. I'll tell you what, he was 100% right. 100% right. And I don't care what the media says, and you shouldn't either, because when something you love is being insulted and abused by people that were welcomed by our generosity, we should be unafraid to say, it's clear you're not happy here. If you come to our party, our nation, and you do nothing but you try to undermine, you try to destabilize, you try to nonstop create issues, we need to ask ourselves the question, what the heck are we doing exactly? And the numbers are shocking. And so in addition, by the way, I'm not even talking about the southern border, which is an outright invasion of our country. And let me just pause. The fact that our leaders in both parties are more focused on what's happening in Ukraine than our southern border is a moral disgrace in our country. It is a moral disgrace. But the numbers are unbelievable when you look at it. And I'm not even just talking about the illegal. We're talking about 2.5 to 3 million illegals invading our country every single year. That's just the illegals. We don't even know the exact number. But let's just talk about the legal immigration. Did you know on top of that, we're giving away 1.2 to 1.5 million green cards and family chain migration citizenship on top of that, of which the criteria is not exactly, you know, do you love the country? Are you bringing a skill set? Are you bringing something? It's, well, if I'm related, and it's almost in some ways affirmative action by immigration. And the unpopular but necessary argument that needs to be communicated time and time again is that if you get immigration wrong, your country collapses. If you get immigration right, your country survives and thrives. It is the civilizational altering question. And our leaders just kind of punt, and they don't always want to talk about it for two reasons. On the conservative side, far too many of them are either idealistic, like I used to be, admittedly, or they're making a lot of money off of cheap labor to make sure you American-born workers don't have to be paid as much. That the plumbers, the welders, the electricians, the muscular class of this country, the people that work with their hands, that shower before work and after work, they want to try to bring down your wages. And they don't want to actually have to pay you an honest wage. But part of it on the other side, and we must be very clear, is that they're not that worried about, you know, the economics of all this. They want to change the country permanently. They want to change it demographically. They want to change it politically. And in fact, they think borders are inherently racist. They think borders are terrible, even though they live in gated communities and they walk around with chauffeured cars all the time. They're the ones telling us that your nation can't have a border. How about this, Nancy Pelosi, or any one of you? How about you take down your big hedges outside of your home in San Francisco and you tell us that you don't want borders? So 22% of Americans don't speak English at home. 22%. Let me just speak about the English and the language thing. You know, I got in a debate with somebody. They said, oh, Charlie, why does the language thing matter? Here's why. When you cannot communicate with your fellow citizen or your person in your country, you are a nation of strangers. And what I learned during COVID is when we are unfamiliar with our neighbor, you become nastier to your neighbor. When you can't see the face of your neighbor, you're less likely to have something in common. I want us to be a country, not a colony, as a nation, where we have a shared story and a shared ethos. When 22% of the country does not even want to learn the language, you know what really upsets me about this? Is that the Irish and the Polish that came here 100 years ago, they made it a priority in their communities to learn English when they came to America. At a very simple ask is that if you come to the country, then you have to learn the language that our Constitution is written in, our Declaration is written in, our Federalist Papers are written in. 44% of people in America don't speak any English at home, any English at home. And we must understand, you know, there's this mythology that immigration has always been very, very high in America. In fact, it has been in the modern era because you might not remember. Going back to World War II and post-World War II, we basically had an immigration moratorium in this country. We only let in like tens of thousands of people a year. Now, why did we do that? We did that because we had a moral obligation to the people who fought in World War II that were coming back to America to prioritize their livelihood, their wages, and their jobs. What I'm getting at is there's a social contract to the American citizen, not the foreigner. You do not have to keep on importing the third world or people that want to come in and they don't have the best necessary dreams or ambitions. And people say, but Charlie, aren't we a nation of immigrants? Think about it. An immigrant is something that comes to a nation that is largely already built. It'd be more fair to say that we're actually a nation of settlers and founders. Now, hear me out. In Missouri, this beautiful state, it was, you know, not exactly a lot of civilization when the first people came to Missouri. Is that an immigrant or a settler? It's more of a settler. It's a mindset of going to the frontier. Homestead Act, you get the land that you could see. That's a tough life, and you guys probably have grandparents that nearly died in those harsh winters, nearly died in the Dust Bowl of the 1930s and 1940s. Now, I'm not diminishing people that are immigrants that go to cities. that go to places already built, but you must not conflate the two. America was largely built on a frontier spirit of going to places that were undeveloped and building something new, not going to a place that already existed. Those are two completely different things. Now, immigration is by invite only, meaning that we want you in the country because you can what? Help the motherland. And when I see in New York City, you know, tens of thousands of people with masks on celebrating Hamas, I can't help but think, I say, boy, if this continues as is, and it might already be too late, and I hope it's not too late, we will have committed suicide by our ideals. I want you to think about that. We will have killed ourselves because we put this utopian ideal over reality. And you have to balance the two. You know, it's nice to say that you can open up the entire country to the entire world and everybody can have a great time and everyone can be there. Or you can check your feelings and your emotion aside and use your brain and use reason. You understand that we're the only country in the world right now, major country, that allows anybody from around the world to come into this country. Anybody. And you look at our, you know, the people that we're competing against. I think China's an enemy, but look at, you think China's allowing that? Of course not. Japan doesn't allow that. And there's some negatives to that. There's some economic growth negatives. There's some things. But honestly, I'm willing to take a lower economic growth number if I can have a country for my daughter to grow up in, not an unrecognizable third world hellhole. So, by the way, we have the best team on the Charlie Kirk Show. Literally 5 minutes before, I was like, what am I going to talk about? I said, let's talk about immigration. You know, just out of nowhere. So I had them look at this. In the 1960s, immigration opened up again, and it's never decreased. Right now, the percentage of Americans born abroad is nearly 14% of the country. But that's assuming that we're massively undercutting the amount of the illegals that are in this nation. And you are the sum of who you allow into your country. And so let me kind of summarize this, and then we'll do some questions. We need to have a reckoning in this nation of, are we a colony or a country? And so people that are conservatives, they largely get the illegal immigration question right. But let me be very even more precise in my language. It's not immigration to border jump into America, okay? That's an invasion that is breaking in line, and that is an insult to anyone that came here legally into the country. With that even being said, though, with the amount of people coming in, there should just be a massive pause before we say, wait, what are we actually doing here? Because we are allowing guilt-ridden politics, guilt-ridden narratives to dictate the nation. You cannot survive at this current rate. And the good news is that you guys are starting to wake up. The media wants you to co-sponsor the suicide of America with guilt. The good news is that the everyday American, you right here, are no longer putting up with it. You, and by the way, some of you college kids, you might say, but you know, come on, how does this impact me? I'll tell you exactly how it impacts you. If you're studying engineering or computer or science, why should a foreign student be prioritized over an American-born, American-educated student? Why on earth would that be smart? It shouldn't be. And the American project, we became excellent. Not because we opened up our doors to every single person. By the way, you know, people say, but Charlie, what about Ellis Island? Do you ever read the disclaimer at Ellis Island? That if you hate the country, you go home. No, you actually should read it. There were all these requirements that if you have diseases or infirms, you know, all this, and you read it and say one of them was if you had absolute hatred of, if you don't share the values, don't come in. Could you imagine if we did that now? Ilhan Omar never would have been allowed into the country. And so, the final point I'll make is this, which is a broader point. I'm excited about it. It's amazing how many smart, simple things we don't do because we're afraid of the names that will be called. And you could connect that to so many things, right? We allow the chemical castration of children in our country because we don't want to be called transphobic. We allow the invasion into the country because we don't want to be called xenophobic. We allow ourselves to be called evil and white privileged because we don't want to be called racist. We like go above and beyond not to be called racist. If you stop allowing the names they call you to determine what you do, all of a sudden the very simple things that you know are right can be done very, very quickly. It's an oversimplification, but I've been doing this for 11 years. I can tell you, it is remarkable how many people in power in this country don't do the simple thing they know is right because they're afraid of the names that the media will call them. If there is one lasting legacy, one lasting legacy of Donald Trump, just one, it's that he empowered the everyday rank and file American to no longer care what the media says about them, to no longer care that you're called all these names. And it goes to every single one of you. Not care if your neighbor calls you a bad name. Not care if you're in a college course or a college class and someone says, oh, you're a racist or you're a bigot. You know who you are. You know your morals. You know your values. And hilariously, they're the ones that usually harbor the feelings that they throw on you. Just for the record, okay? They're the ones that are arguing for black-only dormitories. Not even an exaggeration. For black-only, like, well, we need to resegregate society because segregation is anti-racism. Right. No, it's a real thing. It's a real thing. I wouldn't be surprised that University of Missouri, I don't know if they're doing it here, but University of Missouri, they're really, that is Stalingrad up there. I'll tell you what, in Columbia, that place is really... That place is really tough. That place has got a lot of problems, I'll tell you what. So, in closing, ordinary people that see their country disappearing and collapsing, there's a lot of reasons for it. There's a cabal of people running the country. But the one thing you can do is break free from the language manipulation, the language control that other people have over you because of the names they might throw on you. And if you find yourself thinking differently or behaving differently, and it happens to me even sometimes, happens to all of us, because of what you might be called, then you're not living in a free country and you're participating in the destruction of the country. I was struck when I was reading about Soviet literature. There's a lot of people in the 80s and 90s that visited the Soviet Union. And they said one of the things, if you went to a coffee shop in the Soviet Union, and you were going to say anything political, you'd always look over your shoulder to make sure you're not being listened to. That's exactly what happens if you go into a Starbucks in America today. Could you go into a Starbucks in America today and say that men are men and women are women without being afraid that some purple-haired jihadi is going to come and throw a thing of coffee on you? By the way, I have two types of jihadis that want me dead now. Like actual jihadis and the other type of jihadis, you know, both religious zealots by different means. But here's the point. I'm not saying that when you walk into the Starbucks, you have to say, men can't give birth. Well, that would be nice. But what I am saying, though, is don't allow your thoughts at the fundamental level to be controlled by the bullying and the totalitarianism that occurs. It's amazing how, I mean, again, it's overused, but it's overused for a reason. If you actually really study 1984, which I'm a student of that book, I think it's ridiculously prophetic, is how they don't just control your behavior, they don't just control your language, they're getting down to controlling your thoughts, to controlling and policing how you actually analyze certain situations. And the good news is that I truly believe at its core that we're under an occupation of an illegitimate regime in this country, and that there's still so much fight and so much goodness left in this country. I believe it at my core. And one of the ways, it's not the only way, but one of the ways that we defeat that, one of the ways that we shed that, is by people saying, I'm not going to change my language, change who I support, because of the bullying and intimidation of what you think you can take away from me. Said differently, you will be the same person in private as you are in public, and vice versa. That you're not going to have to put on a uniform and pretend to be somebody that you're not. This makes them weaker. And it puts them on defense. One of the reasons they have a cultural hold on us is that exactly. And our secret weapon is to release the everyday rank and file person to speak their mind, regardless of the cost, regardless of the cancellation. It is easier said than done. Some of you might lose your job. Some of you might get different grades and lower grades in class. But here's my one guarantee. You'll be able to look at your kids and your grandkids and say, I was not a coward when it mattered most. And that is much more important than anything else. All right, let's do some questions, everybody. All right. All right, so we're going to line up here, and we usually do a line. If you disagree, you can go to the front of the line. Let me just kind of lay some ground rules. So make them questions, not statements, because we want to get to as many questions as possible. Also, obviously, this is a predominant conservative audience, right? Can tell? That's the line right there if you guys want to start lining up. But let me just let me just mention a couple things. Since it is a predominant conservative audience, please give respect if you hear something wacky or goofy from a liberal questioner. Don't mock, don't laugh, just sit respectfully, because we as conservatives want to give the left the respect they never give us here tonight. Okay? All right, let's do some questions.
Good afternoon, Mr. Kirk. My name is Kevin. I'm a student here, volunteer, and veteran. And my question is, if you could run, or if you were old enough, would you run for the presidency in this election?
No, I would not. No, thank you. I'm flattered. look, people say, yeah, I just turned 30. I'm getting too old for this stuff, I got to tell you. People say, are you going to run for something, all this? I have the greatest job in the world. I get every day, I get to see the fruits of my labor. Minds changed, people motivated, patriots encouraged. Every single day, I get to see it. Every single day. And I was very, very good friends with Rush Limbaugh before he passed away. And boy, we miss Rush, don't we? What an unbelievable patriot and hero. And a Missouri product, might I add. And I mean, I'm never going to be Rush, but if I could have a fraction of the impact Rush had, I believe at my core, that's what's missing most in America right now, is to help fill that void of a teacher, an encourager, a truth teller, someone that calls balls and strikes, someone that lifts you up when you need it the most. And look, our show is growing like crazy right now. I never would have imagined it. We're filling out auditoriums. And then so that's number one. I want to try to help fill that void to be a teacher and an encourager and a truth teller. And the second part of it is I'm an entrepreneur and organizer. Turning Point USA and Turning Point Action have grown beyond our wildest imaginations. We're on thousands of campuses across the country. Our pastor outreach program at TPUSA Faith, we have 2,000 pastors and church partnerships now at TPUSA Faith, some right here. And so that's what I feel called to do. People ask me to run for office. You think I want to run for office to be part of that circus? They can't even pick a Speaker of the House. They can't even pick a Speaker of the House. Meanwhile, I get to speak to all of you amazing patriots, hear your concerns, teach something that I might have learned through my 11 years of study and research and thousands of hours I've dedicated to this. But most importantly, bring the fight to the country. Bring the fight where it matters most, especially the next generation. God bless you, man. Thank you.
Hey, I'm Jay Dubs, and I identify as a woman.
Oh, yeah.
I was going, women's abortion, I was going to, like, I know you're against it and everything, but it's, like, their right. It's, like, their body, like, not yours or mine, and it's obviously their choice, and I just think that it's okay, and I know that you don't, so what, I guess, what's your, like, point?
Cool. When did your life begin?
Whenever I was born.
Okay, so it would have been okay to terminate a baby all throughout gestational period up to 39 weeks.
Yeah, if they, like, I guess if they got pregnant and they didn't want to, like if my mom got pregnant, my dad just, like, you know, did it and, like, she didn't want to, and then, like, I was born, like, I feel like that would be her, like, choice to do so.
Got it. So is it okay to murder your 6-month-old?
No.
Why?
Because it's a whole entire kid. But I'm talking about, like, Plan C.
Like, no, hold on. Repeat what you said. I didn't hear what you said.
That's like a whole kid.
Months. But you have a whole kid at 38 weeks, too. So at 32 weeks, a baby can survive outside the womb. So I'm just trying to understand your position, why the, like, moral worth of a baby changes at 32 weeks versus 6 months.
So it's like, instead of like Plan B, it's like Plan C, like the coat hanger.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
No, I don't know what you mean.
Actually. I was just wondering, honestly. This is my take, and it's, like, my opinion and stuff. Like, I'm a transgender woman, so
oh, yeah.
I wanted to just see, if, like, what you would say about abortion.
Okay, got it. Yeah. So, but again, so when does life begin objectively?
Well, honestly, I have another question for you.
But pretty important, right? When does life begin?
When you're born out of your mom's womb.
Okay, what if you were born at 28 weeks? That's okay?
I mean, you can't be born at 28 weeks, right?
Yeah, you can. She was born at 28 weeks. It's called a cesarean section. Do you know what that is?
I have no idea what that is.
Yeah, okay, got it. So it's called a C-section, right? It's actually 1/4 of all deliveries in America are done by cesarean section. So let me ask you, fingerprint, heartbeat, brain waves, how is that not a life?
Yeah, I don't know. So what if they got sex trafficked? What if they got sex trafficked?
Don't you think it's important then to protect every life, regardless of how bad you want that life gone?
For sure. Yeah. What if they get like sex trafficked and then like they had a kid but they didn't want it? Is that still like not okay to get a?
So there's no such thing as an unwanted human being in this country. We have twice as many people on the adoption list than we have abortions in this country. Okay. And so that the language you are using of unwanted is no different than eugenics or Nazi Germany, correct?
Yep.
So you would agree with Hitlerian eugenics when it comes to pregnancies?
Yep.
Okay. Right. Your position is clear. Thank you very much.
You changed my life. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Best of luck in future employment.
Hold your applause.
Don't do drugs, please. Don't do drugs, guys.
How's it going, Mr. Sir?
Good. Thanks.
So is Obama white or black?
Say that again.
Is he white or black?
I can't hear. Slow down.
Is President future or past President Obama, is he white or
is
he black?
He's half and half.
He's half and half.
Yeah. Okay, according by his own admission. But
a lot of people say he's black, but if he has a white parent and a black parent. Okay.
I said he's half and half.
Okay. But the take is that if they want to keep the white primacy pure form, so they want to say that he's black.
Yeah, I honestly haven't thought very deeply about the racial composition of Obama.
If you get a pizza from Domino's, okay?
Yeah, again,
This is relative.
You should probably stop.
This is relative, unlike you. Trust me.
Okay.
If you get a half pepperoni and half cheese pizza, it's not a cheese pizza.
Right. So, cool. Like I said, half white, half black, half cheese, half pepperoni. What's the point? Where are you getting at?
Why is everybody laughing at me?
The lack of self-awareness is shocking. Thanks for being here. Okay, Missouri State starting strong, everybody. I got to tell you. Okay.
Mrs. Charlie, it's an honor to meet you. I'm a huge fan of you, Candace, Ben Shapiro, and for someone that looks like me, if I even say I'm a conservative, I often get a strange look. So how do I stand up and say I'm a conservative and then without people saying, oh, how can you be a conservative? And often they refer to saying like, oh, how can you be conservative and be black? And which is like something I often struggle to respond to, because I don't know why my skin color even plays even any part in being what part of politics I stand.
Isn't that great? Anybody who says that is no better than a KKK activist from 150 years
ago.
Because they believe that if you have a skin color, you must believe a certain thing. The answer is you don't have to explain yourself. And I know it's tough, but I would throw it right back at them. I think you should say, excuse me, why do you think you know my value system based on the melanin content in my skin? Why are you judging me? Why are you putting me in a box? Webster definition of racism is prejudging a person based on the melanin content in somebody's skin. Now, I don't throw around the racist term like a frisbee because I'm not a leftist. But anybody that says that or gives you a weird look or says you can't be a conservative because you're black is just as racist as a grand wizard from the American South from the late 1800s. Let me also say this, though. People like you give me hope. People like you that are fighting back and that are standing up. I am so disturbed by the American left's occupation of black America. Black America needs to rise up and needs to reject these Marxist, liberal, left-wing influences, and it's going to start with people like you. So God bless you, and thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
Great. If you disagree, come to the line. Yes, next question.
Uh,
Good evening, Mr. Kirk. Pleasure to have you here. My name is Nicholas Pruitt, and I'm from Southwest Baptist University. Cool. I just wanted to hear your comments on what Mike Pence called the siren song of populism, that is to say an epidemic that's sweeping the left and the right in this country, because I think it's pretty clear the founding fathers were against populism. I mean, John Adams said the Constitution was created for a moral and religious people and is wholly inadequate for government of any other. Alexander Hamilton wrote in the Federalist Papers against the passions of an unrestrained people, and that's why he advocated for a strong central government, and I tend to be against populism myself. I think it's pretty damaging for the country and its core institutions, but I wanted to hear your thoughts on it. It sounds to me like you're a populist. I don't want to speak for you, just hear your thoughts on that, sir.
I'm definitely a conservative populist. I think populism can go too far. I mean, obviously, I agree with my founding fathers in that regard. But honestly, in recent times, I'm really thrilled with the populist movement because it has exposed some issues that old school conservatives like Mike Pence have been ignoring. One in particular is immigration. We did a whole speech on that tonight. If you would have just gone through doctrinaire, old school conservatism, they say, well, just allow as many people as possible into the country and, you know, sit down and shut up. Sometimes when the people are yelling and trying to tell you something, we should listen. The best way I could summarize populism in its most healthy way that Mike Pence does not hold. And I don't know if you guys are Mike Pence fans, but that, I don't know. Is listening to your voters and not despising them and ignoring them when they're telling you something is amiss. When your voters are saying our wages are going down and the dollar is decreasing in value and our kids are not sharing our values, Mike Pence should not, in an elitist way, smugly look down on them and say, I know better than you. At the same time, the passions of a populist can go too far, right? We shouldn't just give reparations because a bunch of people want reparations. But we have gone so far out of whack that what they call conservatism is actually neoliberalism masquerading as conservatism, where it's actually left-wing values that have inserted itself into the conservative movement. So there's parts of me that are very populist. I'm more of a nationalist than honestly a populist because I love my country, and every single decision our leaders should make is what is best for the nation, what is best for the citizens. And if populism is a constructive means to that end, if people are screaming in pain, you don't give a speech and say, sit down and shut up. You should say, why are you hurting and how can I fix it? And that is populism at its best. Thank you so much.
For the record, I support Mike Pence, but I also see your criticism.
Say that again, sorry.
I support Mike Pence and I think he's a very honorable man, but I can see your
Don't boo him. That's all right. Thank you. Thanks.
My name's Jackson Deal, and I'm from SBU, and I was going to ask, so do you want Trump to be in office in 2024?
Okay. I will answer this on my personal capacity and on behalf of Turning Point USA.
Right.
Oh, yes, I am 100% behind Donald Trump in 2024.
I'm looking at the numbers, and I think, like, just of all the candidates, I'd vote for Trump, but I think, in my opinion, he's the least likely. Or if Joe Biden had to go against someone, Trump would be the best person to beat. So compared to other candidates, and again, I'm going to vote for Trump if he makes it. But I'm just genuinely worried just how, just as shown with the first election, the rationality, Trump was saying rational things. He was right, but he hurt a lot of people's feelings. And yeah, it's like, it's ridiculous. Like, and I'm just thinking, like, yep. It's just like...
So again, let me... You're coming at it from a good place. I disagree, though. So this is a silly statement, but it's necessary. Trump is the only person running for president that has been president before. So the fact that he can't win is just laughable, right? He was a great president for 4 years, so obviously he got there somehow. But there's also this mythology about the 2020 election. And let me just be very clear. That election was a drive-by shooting of the U.S. Constitution and was one of the great injustices that has ever happened in our country. Let me just say that. Zuckerberg with $400 million, the censorship of a Hunter Biden laptop, mass mail-in voting, taking days to count ballots, signature verification issues, all that stuff. But and with that, there is this belief that, oh, my goodness, Trump got blown out of the water. Trump fell 9,000 votes short in Arizona. He fell 10,000 votes short in Georgia and 22,000 votes short in Wisconsin, despite every major institution being against him. And I actually think, I have a different opinion. I think he's the most likely of any of the candidates because he brings out voters that Republicans otherwise have never been able to reach. People that are disaffected, low propensity voters. These are patriots, police officers, veterans, as I talk about the muscular class, people that believe the system is rigged against them because they're right. And if President Trump is able to rebuild that type of coalition, you always want a high energy candidate that can drive tons and tons of turnout. But we must be very clear. People say, oh, he got blown out in 2020. Even with all the deception and the garbage and all that stuff that we saw, even with it, you're talking about cumulatively in three states, you're talking about 40,000 votes out of 150 million cast. So let's not rewrite history. This is a guy that was on the margins of the margins with the COVID death counts and the coup from Fauci and Burks and all the ways that they crossed him, right? He was on the margins of the margins of earning another term despite everything they threw against him. One final thought, we'll get to the next question. Yeah.
So, yeah, I definitely agree. Like, the numbers are very suspicious. And I really like your argument saying that go for the best one, because I do think Trump is the best one out of all of them and is the most outspoken. I'm just still shocked that someone like Joe Biden, I call him Captain Alzheimer's, I'm not going to lie.
Yep.
Yeah. Wins, and you know what, I'm going to take the harm. Still, I'm going to see, I like to analyze stuff. I want to see how they all kind of play out, but I definitely like that perspective and think.
Cool. Thanks, man.
2024.
Okay. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Hi, Charlie, I got a question for you here.
Sure.
So, sorry, I'm not very used to impromptu speaking, so.
Take your time, man.
The Republican Party has been choosing to replace the values of white America with the values of minority groups that are foreign and progressive. As time goes on, the conservative movement has continually given up ground on positions that were once unacceptable to most Americans. This has progressed to a point where Republicans choose to take liberal positions in order to pander for votes. Middle-class white America is opting out of American politics because they are being shamed for their identity, and their voices are being ignored. They are left to choose between a political party that hates them and a political party that does not care for them. Why do you think this is happening?
Why do I think they're disengaging, or why do I think they're not fighting for their voters?
Why do you think that the system is currently targeting them?
That's a good question. There's a lot of people at the top of the ladder that are plagued with white guilt, to be honest. White guilt is a major thing. You guys should read Shelby Steele's book on it. He's a black philosopher and economist, where he says white guilt has been the number one driver of bad political decisions over the last 50 or 60 years. But honestly, even more than the race thing, I just think that American values are under attack from a hyper-academic elite that say that certain things are quote-unquote whiteness, right? And so let me give you an example. The Smithsonian Museum, the Black African-American History Museum, the Smithsonian Museum, said that showing up on time, doing mathematics, speaking with proper grammar is quote-unquote whiteness. What they're really getting at is they're trying to say the values that are not necessarily white or black that built the West are evil and toxic. And why the leaders want that? That's an intention question. I can't answer intention questions unless they reveal it bluntly and plainly and repeatedly. But it is true, and I've said it before, that whether it be affirmative action, hiring practices, or the quote-unquote racial reckoning that happened post-Floydapalooza, there is an institutional war on white people in this country. It is harder for a white student to get into a university and a college than a black student or a Hispanic student with similar grades or even lower grades. So why it's happening, that's speculation that people can fill in the dots for themselves, but it's 100% happening, whether through immigration or other ways. And yeah, that's the best answer I can give to that. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Kirk. So as you know, our opposition has a habit of redefining language and changing the meaning of words in order to, well, trick people. And that's why it's very important, I think, to define our words, especially when talking about things like immigration. So I wanted to know your opinion, setting aside things like paperwork, you know, like your government status, your citizenship status. Do you believe that people who migrate to America from any part of the world can claim to be Americans in the same way that, say, someone who perhaps founded and settled this country, you know, 10 generations ago can?
It depends. It depends. I think it's more of a value question, right? I mean, I wouldn't go back 10 generations. I mean, I'll give you an example. If you came in the wave of immigration in the early 1900s as an Irish or a Polish immigrant and you assimilated to the country and learned the language, yes, you are an American, absolutely. Or I'll give another example. If you're a Cuban that fled Castro's communism in the 1960s and come to America and you learn the language and you hate Marxism and you're fighting every single day for a freer country, yes. Because I do not think America in its core is a racial makeup at all. I do think, though, that if you ignore the history and the tradition of the country and try to change the country too dramatically, then, and you ignore its roots, well, then you're committing civilizational suicide. I'll add to this, though. So, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but let me just say that there's no guarantee. I mean, because let's just take a state that is one of the oldest states in the country, right? Vermont, okay? Vermont is a very white state. Vermont has a lot of people that have been there for 8, 9, or 10 generations. Vermont is one of the least free states in the country, right? And so there's not necessarily a one-to-one correlation of, oh my goodness, these people have been around for so long and they're necessarily embracing the right value system. In fact, they're embracing some of the goofiest and wacky ideas. Bernie Sanders is the senator from Vermont. Burlington, Vermont is one of the most insane places imaginable. But no, I do think that a country can go way too far. And Vermont is full of Mayflower descendants that then have abandoned American values. And let me say something provocative. When I go down the streets of Burlington, Vermont, and I'll meet a 19-year-old with purple hair that believes men can give birth, that might be an 11th generation or 10th generation descendant of the Mayflower Compact, or if I walk the streets of Miami and I see a second generation Cuban that loves liberty and loves freedom, honestly, the person who's a second generation American in Miami is much more of an American than the person that's been here for 11 generations in Burlington, Vermont.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that. I just wanted to add a quick follow-up. Do you believe your opinion would be the same as those who, you know, founded the country and settled the country?
I mean, you'd have to read what they wrote. So, right. Yeah, I mean, generally, the American founders believed in a Latin phrase, e pluribus unum. Do you know what that means?
Mm-hmm.
Out of many, one.
Right.
That's part of the American Trinity. The American Trinity is liberty, in God we trust, and e pluribus unum. And e pluribus unum de-emphasizes race, tribe, and sectarian ideology, and it prioritizes character, action, and values. And that's the country I want to live in. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, Charlie. I just wanted to appreciate you coming out here to talk, and I agreed with most of your points. As a conservative and Christian, I liked what you had to say tonight. My question isn't really about what you talked about, but I was just wondering if you've ever looked into flat Earth before.
Yeah, the Earth is not flat.
Have you ever genuinely gave it a good look?
For about 30 seconds, and then I learned to do math and flew in a plane and saw a spherical Earth. Yeah.
Did it? Okay. I mean, that... I'd say maybe it's worth giving another shot at. A good YouTube channel is Eric Dubay on YouTube. I just think you maybe should give it another shot.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Hi, Charlie. I'm Robin Truelove. I remember you saying that we should not accommodate our society based on mental delusion, yet you let all of them in front of me in line.
Oh, that's funny. That's a good point. That's a good point, okay? That's a good one.
My question is about favoritism in schools. I have a coach that's had his foot on my Mighty Might football player's neck for 3 years now. He plays his coach's friends and their friends and their friends. And I want to know how to get around that. I said something to him, and he tried to get me kicked off of the school. And I didn't incite violence or anything that I wasn't supposed to do. So I looked it up on Google, and you're supposed to go to the coach. And when I went to the coach, he tried to have me exited from the school. My son's a very good player. He's not a player that shouldn't be there.
So there's only one way to solve it, because I actually experienced this firsthand. Your son has to handle it himself. You can't fight that battle. Your son has to pick the fight with a better player and challenge him publicly. It's the only way.
Tell him to practice.
Nope, you got to hear me out. And if it, you have to publicly say in front of the team, I'm a better player than you, and I will prove it. I will prove it every single day. There is no other way. You will expose the favoritism. Now, that's ballsy because your son better be the better player.
No, he is. No, listen. They tell him to practice at 50% at practice and will not even let him do.
Great. Can I give you some advice, though? You're way too involved. You're way too involved. Your son's got to fight this battle, and you got to disengage. I know you love your son because I dealt with something similar in high school. Best thing my parents did was not get involved. Have to pick your own fight. And guess what? I didn't win. I wanted to play quarterback, and I didn't. So, well, I made a good career. But I know this is a tough love. You should not get involved in that. You got to tell your son, like, look, fight your own battle. Pick it out. Call it out. Go to the coach and look him in the eye and say, why are you favoring people? Like, I'm not going to let off of you. Like, I'm the better player. I'm going to be respectful. I'm going to show up on time. I'm going to do my weights, you know. And if you are the better player, and then you start together with players engaged or involved in that. But there's no easy fix. Favoritism is part of life, unfortunately. It just is. And there's no guarantee that that will even work. But at the very least, there's a risk that you can call out the corruption, because it's the same rule in favoritism of sports that it is in politics. When you see corruption and you see insider deals or secret societies, you must shine a light on it. And it's best if it's shown a light on it internally. So I know that might not be the message you want to hear, but can I say something you might not want to hear? You're probably hurting.
Okay, well, you're very smart, so I wanted to hear
your
opinion.
I'm just telling you that if as mom involved, it will only make the coach less likely to accommodate the – I know that's a provocative thing to say, and I know I'm going out on a limb here, but you may have to take a step back and let your son fight the battle for himself.
I will definitely do that, and I wanted to, in closing, say that life begins before we are born. God said he knew us before we were in our mother's
Jeremiah. Womb. Jeremiah. Amen. Thank you.
Hi, Mr. Kirk. Thank you for taking my question. First, I'd like to begin by saying that America is the best country in this world.
Yes, it is.
I love this country, and I love my God. I'd like to say those two things. You talked a lot about how immigration, especially illegal immigration, is changing the culture of the United States in a negative way.
Yep.
And I think a lot of the importance of that is remembering, like, what makes America great. And so my question to you is, could you just elaborate a little bit about what makes America the best country on earth?
Yeah. Well, first of all, we have a unique founding. The founding of America is one of the great miracles in humanity ever. And understanding what led to the founding is also important. A religious revival led to the greatest political accomplishment in human history. It was Jonathan Edwards and Jonathan Mayhew and George Whitefield preaching thousands and thousands of sermons, asking for repentance along the Eastern Seaboard, that led to the prerequisite for the people of the nation to want liberty, which is God's idea, not man's idea. Deuteronomy was the most cited book in the founding of the nation, secular or religious. So we were great because we went to eternal principles. We are great, hopefully, well, we're losing our greatness, but we need to go back to what made the founding so interesting and so unique and exceptional was you look at the promise of the Declaration of Independence. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands that have tied them to another, that's an eternal question, that any people at any time deserve liberty and self-government if you can handle it, as Adams would say, because the Constitution is written solely for a moral or religious people. But it goes on that the Constitution derived certain bedrock eternal principles from the scriptures, and they built a whole government around it, that all men are created equal, separation of powers, checks and balances, independent judiciary, three branches of government. Now, the form itself is not everything, though, because you could take the American Constitution and put it in a random country, and they are not free. Look at Liberia. Liberia has an American flag, their capital is Monrovia, they actually have a pretty robust constitution, and they're not a free country, because it's not just the form of government, but it's also the matter of the people with the form. And what I'm getting at is that there were four major religious revivals in this country that have kept the country free. In First Chronicles, it says, my people will turn their face to me and repent. I'm afraid we have not done that in a long time in this country. And secondarily, beyond that, though, there is a uniquely American ethic and ethos. Delayed gratification, private property ownership, I'm going to go above and beyond so that my children can live a better life than I live. Intergenerational stratification is a very wordy way to say it. that if you believe that what you do will make dividends for your kids or grandkids, you're willing to do the right thing. If you think what you're going to do makes no impact, well, then you live in a country like India where you feel as if you're in a caste system and you'll never be able to move up. That's a long answer to a very good question, but it's not just the form, but it's the matter. And if you import matter into the country that is at odds with the form, then the form ceases to exist. When you import hundreds of thousands of Ilhan Omar that don't believe in the First Amendment, they don't believe in the Second Amendment, they don't believe in states' rights, they don't believe in E Pluribus Unum, they don't believe in God We Trust, and they don't believe in liberty, well, then those bedrock principles fail to exist because they want to impose their own in there. And finally, the reason why the country is also collapsing is we're becoming a less religious country. Alexander Solzhenitsyn said, in the Gulag Archipelago, all of these atrocities happened because people forgot God. It is a direct correlation. As America has become more secular and less religious, we become less free.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, if anyone disagrees, we'll find you to the front of the line, guys. And yes, ma'am, I like your hat.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Kirk. My name is Mitzi. I am 64 years old, and I'm a retired nurse. This past year has been, I'm going to say it, hell for me. I'm a faithful, godly Christian woman, and I do have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I lost my daughter. She would be 36 years old, 3 days before Christmas last year, to fentanyl. Me and my husband now have our 18-year-old grandson living with us, trying to turn his life around.
Yeah.
He lost both of his parents. I have seen and I have dealt in the nursing field, I have dealt with fentanyl myself with patients, and I know how to do that. What I'm seeing come across the border is very scary, and I am really afraid for everybody here that somebody's going to get fentanyl by accident and die.
Yeah.
I want to know what we can do to help that.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm very sorry for your loss. I just want to say that. And God has a plan for your life, and you have a very important project to make sure that 18-year-old has
a great life.
So don't be discouraged, okay?
Yeah. That's
the first thing. What can we do? Well, we can close the border. That would be nice. And we could stop the flow of fentanyl into this country. I'm curious, how many of you know somebody that died because of fentanyl? Raise your hand. Yeah, I mean, how many of you know someone that was killed by a Russian?
No, oh my God.
I know. Nobody?
Yeah, a couple veterans raised their hands. Fair enough. Okay.
Fair enough. That's fair.
The point is this. Why the heck are our leaders more concerned about Vladimir Putin than they are about fentanyl? That is a disgrace. Yes. It is a disgrace. Fentanyl impacts every single person in this room. So what can we do? Look, what's so sad about the fentanyl issue is you isolated. It can be done by mistake, is that people have a different intention at time to do a drug that is not as hard and they could overdose on it. I by no means am an expert on it, but here's what I could say. The Chinese Communist Party is the manufacturer of a lot of this fentanyl, also the prerequisite ingredients for it at the very least. Why on earth we are not doing everything we can, have sanctions and tariffs on the reverse opium wars against the West, is beyond me. The Chinese Communist Party released a deadly virus on the entire world. We locked down, we destroyed our currency over it, they were never held accountable, and they pump in fentanyl that kills over 100,000 people a year in this country. Our elites are captured. And I'm very sorry for your loss, but it was co-sponsored by three different things: the Chinese Communist Party, the cartel, and weak conservative leaders that have kept the southern border porous and wide open.
I just want to give you some statistics. She was in Washington State. The coroner from the Seattle King County coroner called me, and I asked him, and he said they were getting 400 a day.
Yeah.
And it took 21 days to cremate her.
It is
they were so backed up, and it's all from fentanyl.
It's a massacre, and I wish our leaders cared. I certainly do. God bless you. We have to get the next question. Thank you. Thank you.
Hello. So I understand that you are anti-abortion. I want to know, at what point do you consider a person to be a person?
Conception.
Okay. So then a follow-up question. Would a miscarriage be considered an abortion by God?
No.
Why? No.
Well, first of all, we don't question God's plans when it comes to life or death. Only he, the author of life, know the purpose. But it's an accidental death, yeah. I mean, it's a tragedy, but no, it was not an abortion by God. No.
So we don't question God's decisions, but we don't accept that he could kill.
No, you should question them.
Okay.
You could question them all you want. To wrestle with God is biblical, but to usurp him is not. Wrestle with questions that are very difficult, it's totally understandable, especially people that have dealt with miscarriages. Okay. God is sovereign. God has a plan, and it doesn't comfort people. But I will say this, that it is tempting to dwell on the mysteries of life, of evil. Now, there's two types of evil. Evil that humans do and evil that just happens for inexplicable reasons. Evil that humans do, I can understand. We are rotten to the core. For example, somebody says, Charlie, the Holocaust made me lose faith in God. I say, no, the Holocaust made me lose faith in humanity, not in God. Big difference. There's other types of evil, though. Natural disasters, hurricanes, tsunamis, earthquakes. Those are tough. We as religious people, miscarriages. We have to explain those, and I'm not the first person to get that question, and there's been an unbelievable amount of writing. However, the atheists or the secularists, they have a lot of explaining to do because they got to explain everything else. They got to explain how that baby was formed in the first place. They have to explore DNA, explain DNA. They have to explain life, breath, our immune system, how we're able to communicate with one another. What I'm getting at is, and you're touching on something that is fundamentally one of the great mysteries of life. And the inexplicable, I think, tests the faith of the believing. And anyone who gives you a great answer to that question is just probably full of bluster. But does it question my faith? No, it actually makes me attach more to an almighty God that gave us existence and life and the universe. Thank you for your question. I appreciate
Thank you.
It. Thank you.
All right, my first question would go toward your comment on kicking out Ihan Omar. Now, she has issues. I agree with everybody here on that.
Yeah, good.
But how do we keep a balance of letting people in who are passionate about our country while also keeping an open political discourse alive?
Okay, just say the last part again. I'm sorry.
The main question is, how do we let people in who are patriotic about this nation but also have an open political discourse with multiple viewpoints, even if there are Ihan Omars?
So how do we let people in with multiple
viewpoints?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, letting multiple viewpoints without undermining our own nation.
Yeah,
what's the balance there?
Yeah, so doing immigration in a sane way would be helpful. Right now, we should put all immigration on pause and stop it. We've let way too many people in this country way too quickly. It's like eating three big meals. You got to let it digest, okay? We got to put the American citizen first. But if we were to reopen immigration, the first question is, how will it benefit the American homeland the best? Now, first, you should pick from countries that historically have been unbelievably pro-American and share our values, right? And to be honest, Somalia would not be at the top of the list. It just isn't, right? I would pick from countries that, for example, allowing Cubans into the country, if they love the country and they want to assimilate, that's proven to be actually a pretty good idea. They're some of the most reliable conservative people in the country. They're family-oriented. They love liberty. So you have to have a criteria. What that criteria looks like or what it is, that's up for policy experts. But I can tell you what we're doing now doesn't work at all. What we're doing now is benevolency-based immigration, chain migration. You're related to this, and it's not working, right? Instead, we should be, okay, what are you here to offer? What can you do if we were to open up immigration? And most importantly, do you share our values?
All right, one more quick question and then a shout-out. yes. My next question would be, historically, like when the Irish and the Germans were coming in, a lot of people thought they would lead to reduced wages for Americans here at home and a lot of cultural upheaval. And long term, it seems to have kind of worked out. So what's the distinction between that historical immigration and the current immigration we're seeing now from the southern border?
Yeah, that's a good question. I will say, well, we did pause that old immigration too, just so you know. We paused it after that wave. But the Irish were largely Catholic or Christian, right? They assimilated. And the Irish in this country also, after the pause, it took a lot of digestion. And so what I'm getting at right now is digestion. See where we're at as a country. Can we get wages up? Which they're not outpacing inflation, right? Can we prioritize American workers? and most importantly, prioritize American students. And let me just focus on this in one particular. It is harder than ever for young people to buy a home. Harder than ever. It is out of reach for so many young people. We should do everything we possibly can to make homeownership possible for young people. It makes them more conservative. It makes them happier. Homeownership is completely out of reach for the next generation. I don't think bringing in a bunch of third worlders is making it easier for students at Missouri State University to be able to own homes. So we got to figure that out. Thank you so much. I got to get to the next question.
I got to get to the next question.
I'm sorry.
I got a shout out. A quick shout out.
No, okay. You have a shout out?
Yes. To my parents, thank you for raising me homeschooled. Public school is not going well right now, and I'm very proud to be raised homeschooled. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Charlie Kirk. My name's Jake Pinkston. How do you recruit younger people to run for office? Because every time we recruit one, the establishment does not seem to get behind them or be supportive of them. Another thing I'm going to say, I've been interested in politics since I was 8 years old. I knew every president, every war movie. I was always very patriotic when I was growing up. But when I look at my generation, I'm not like them. I'm just not. And I just, when I was with my friends, they all kind of agreed with me.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I see on the news, they seem like a different total people. But when I'm in my community, they're all like me here.
Yep.
And how do you recruit younger people to run for office? That was the same, without the establishment stabbing them in the back. I just feel like it's been going on.
Yeah, so we need to thank you for being here. Great question. We need to reconfigure our politics to be grassroots oriented. And we need to get rid of the old boys club of central meetings and put the people back in charge of how we select candidates and how.
But I want them going back in the office.
And you might say, how do we do that? That's where you come in handy. Become a precinct committeeman. Get involved in your county party. Get involved in your state party. These meetings are insufferable, but they're necessary, okay? You got to show up. You have, right, Will? I mean, they're awful. They go for 9 hours, and they're about, like, it's terrible. But the grassroots outnumber the oligarchs, everybody. And a call to action is that's how we start to draft better people to run for office. God bless you, man. Thanks for being here tonight. Thank you.
Hello, Charlie. I have a quick question about founding documents.
Yep.
Us as Americans, we talk a lot about the importance of our founding documents. For example, the Declaration of Independence. My question is, I want your opinion on when those documents become irrelevant, such as the Naturalization Act of 1795.
Yes, that's not in the Declaration. That's a piece of legislation passed after it, right? So, and what you're talking about is a piece of legislation that prioritized white Americans, right? Is that
founders, yes.
Yes, got it. So, well, you asked two different questions. So when does the Declaration become irrelevant? Never.
No, that was not my question, okay, sir. My question is founding documents. When do they become irrelevant?
Well, I wouldn't say that a piece of legislation passed after the Constitution Declaration is a founding document. So I'd be careful giving that designation, right? But let me ask you, if that was a core value of the founders, where does race appear in the Declaration or the Constitution?
No answer, sir.
Right. Because it was not a core value. It was a political impulse in the 1790s. The core values was to try to create a society where skin color was de-emphasized. Thank you.
Have a good day.
Hi, Mr. Kirk. I think climate change is a much more serious issue than the conservative movement gives it credit for. And so my question is, what common ground can we find regarding climate action? And how can we get more conservatives in on the movement? What can we find that we agree on?
Cool. I just want to make sure I understand where you're coming from. And this is not a trick question. Can you define what you mean by climate change?
Primarily reducing carbon emissions and other greenhouse gases.
Got it. So is your argument that rising global temperatures are tied to carbon emissions?
To my understanding, the scientific consensus is quite solid on that, yes.
Got it. Okay. So, again, not a trick question. What is carbon? It's not a trick question.
Okay. It's an element.
Yeah, right.
And carbon dioxide traps heat in the atmosphere.
Right. So carbon is life, right? Carbon, yeah, exactly. You can't have life without
carbon. Heard this before, though, and the idea that carbon is plant food is great, but the reality is when there's 40 billion tons being emitted a year by a network of global factories and global tailpipes, that absolutely has an impact on climate. And
right.
I'm disappointed that this is the reaction
to
the question, honestly, because I don't know how you all – we're in an agricultural area. We're seeing it worse every year. It's getting
Hold on. Let me ask you a question.
I don't know why conservative movement insists on resisting the scientific –
Well, I'm not resisting. I'm asking what carbon is. Okay, so let's make sure we're clear on what I'm saying. Do you think there could be other explanations as to why global temperatures are rising?
Yes.
Such as?
They've studied them, and it's not due to anything other than the emissions, to my understanding.
Okay, so not solar flares, global tilt?
Well, they've accounted for those, and they've found out that – those are not the main drivers of the climate change that we're seeing.
Okay, so you trust, I just want to make sure I understand, you trust consensus from scientists that put forward reports?
No, I trust ExxonMobil's own scientist who found this out in the 1980s and hid the findings for decades so that they wouldn't lose money.
Right, so excuse me, just as a kind of side note, I'm unbelievably skeptical when I hear scientists say, especially after I had to hear that a vaccine is safe and effective and closing down schools and putting masks on kids, was a good answer. But let's pretend you're right. Okay, let's pretend that climate change is an existential threat. Would that be something that you say?
To our existence, to the human species? Probably not. I imagine the rich will always find an ark to live in while the rest of us have our crops fail.
You have some nuance, so that's fair. So let's talk then about, let's pretend you're right. Let's say that there's some solutions. What would be a solution? Should we get rid of fossil fuels?
You know, if we could just filter out it's the carbon that's doing it. So I don't know about
getting
off of fossil fuels, but if we could
see, that's why I asked about your premise. The amount of certainty you have in a planet that is so massive with such unbelievable biodiversity to immediately act that we, the humans, are the only reason that global temperatures might be going up, I think is a flawed hypothesis. Because if you're wrong, then we might try to find a solution that actually might be more about private property confiscation and wealth deterioration, aka Marxism, not actually solving the problem. That's why I challenge the hypothesis, what else might be contributing to it. So let's just ask some very basic questions. So if carbon is the problem, would you support planting 1 trillion trees?
Yes.
Okay, good. We agree. So
carbon is part of the solution. I think there's a broader set of solutions than what the Democratic Party specifically has been bringing to the table. But again, this resistance by the conservatives to
acknowledge
that this carbon is an issue.
Why do you think we ask questions? Because we're dumb? Or why do you think?
Skepticism with good reason.
But
at some point, when in looking for the answer, you need to acknowledge that the answer can be found. And the answer has been found. People have spent their lives and careers studying this for decades. It's been over 100 years ago since people were first talking about the idea that carbon was trapping heat. So this is not a new idea.
Do you have any fear that the solution might be worse than the problem?
What solution? Sure, some. Yeah. Yeah.
Mandatory electric vehicles?
Oh, no, electrical vehicles will mine the ocean to death before we get everyone an electric car. It's not a
solution. That's also cobalt's really, really bad for the environment.
Yeah, we need to go car-free and build walkable communities again, actually.
No, that's a very bad idea. See, now we're getting somewhere, okay? Bad idea. Cars are freedom, right? Without a vehicle, you are a captive of the government in an open-air prison, right? And so just look at San Francisco.
It just means you can walk to the grocery store without needing a vehicle.
Right. That's a 15-minute city model. But no, this is important, and we're not going to
I've been studying architecture for 4 years. I've been studying a little bit of urbanism, too.
Right.
It's not taking away your freedoms, the fact that you get to go to a grocery store and a library and a coffee store within a 15-minute walk, folks.
Okay.
That's actually independence from the automobile. But that's
Independence is being able to go where you want to go when you want to go there. That's what independence is.
Yeah.
But we're not going to find – here's the one thing that I want to make sure. And I don't get this from you because you're coming at it from a good place. The panic over climate becomes such a priority by people that also have the solution in mind. I'm not saying it's you, right?
It's fair.
And
that's
so
fair.
We have a built-in healthy skepticism over the last decade that we are being constantly lied to by the same amount of cabal of criminals, and at the very least, exaggerating the threat, okay? Exaggerating the threat, where we are told we must take our freedoms and liberties away. We must reconfigure our life. And I'll be very honest with you that with all of the pressing challenges that face humanity, like the most suicidal generation in history, the most drug-addicted generation in history, the most alcohol-addicted generation in history, the fixation on an abstraction of rising global temperatures is an academic distraction from real material suffering that people have when the activists, not necessarily you, but the loudest activists, AOC, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, Bernie Sanders, they want to get rid of fossil fuels, they want to disenfranchise millions of people of work, and they want to basically put the entire grid in an unrealistic solar, wind, and turbine type model.
Mr. Kirk, you sound so much like the liberal coastal elites that you rail against, because the reality is the first year that my family bought cows, 2012, we had a record-breaking drought, and hay had to be trucked in from Oklahoma or Texas. The following spring, it rained so hard and so much, it broke records, and the bridges washed out, and my mother couldn't get to work. So this is very much a real issue.
Let me ask you, in the last 50 years, have there been irregular weather patterns in the 60s, 70s, or 80s? Yes. I would just close with this. You could talk to any rancher or farmer here in Missouri. Unpredictability is part of the agrarian lifestyle. To act as if you could perfectly model it, and but here's the one thing about climate change that drives me crazy, and I'll just close with it, is that no matter what happens, it gets warmer, it's climate change, it gets colder, it's climate change, the tornado, it's climate change, it's sunny, it's climate change. It's the one thing that confirms the hypothesis regardless of the result. And so it's the perfect thing to argue for. You might be right, I don't think you are, that rising global temperatures are necessarily tied to human activity. But every solution I hear, every solution would obliterate the American economy and destroy our ability to use our greatest asset, with his fossil fuels, natural gas, liquid natural gas, and oil. Thank you so much. I got to get to the next question. Thank you.
Hi, Charlie. Thanks for being here. I fell for the college scam when I was in my 30s. And for the past decade, have found myself working in the tech sector. And I just wanted to know what you thought about us staying in that sector and planting where, grow where we are planted, or should we try to reskill and connect to the Patriot economy?
Wow, that's a great question. I don't know the answer for you. I can see it both ways. Grow where you are planted. I like that. I'm going to use that. That's really smart. We need a lot of conservatives in tech. There's a brain drain right now of conservatives in the technology field. It all depends on whether or not you feel as if you're advancing your values. For example, if you work for Salesforce, probably not a good idea. You should probably cut bait, because Mark Benioff is a card-carrying Marxist communist Stalinist.
I don't work for Salesforce, but I'm a Salesforce administrator.
Oh, well, I guessed right.
I saw your segment with Michael Seifert last week.
Yeah,
so
no,
really
I know.
About that.
I happen to pick on Salesforce a lot because they deserve it. And so, not a good company. Only you know the answer to that. But the question is, do you feel as if you're moving the ball forward for your values?
I don't.
Well, then you know the answer.
Okay. Do you have any advice on how to get connected to tech leaders in the Patriot economy?
Yeah, Public Square is a great way, right? PublicSQ.com. You guys got to all download the Public Square app. They're amazing, right? Aren't they great? And in addition to that, just make yourself available. If you have tech talent, you will be hired. There is such a need in these tech conservative companies to find people that share their values. And so send your resume around, find Michael Seifert. He could definitely, Public Square is kind of becoming this one-stop shop for entrepreneurs and businesses. It's amazing. So happy to help with that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate
so much.
It. All right, we'll do a couple more. And again, if you disagree, we'll try to get through. Yes, sir.
Good evening, Charlie. I'm assuming my question is not going to gain me a lot of popularity with both Republicans and Democrats.
That's the best kind of question.
My name's Chase Boggs. I was an infantry Marine who was discharged due to the vaccine mandate, and then I worked for a Republican in U.S. Congress after that. So we agree on a lot, but we disagree on one key topic, I would say. With every projection pointing to a Trump primary victory and Trump repeatedly claiming a stolen 2020 election, which I agree with him on, how can Trump supporters be optimistic about a 2024 general election and be certain that the same thing won't happen again, since no federal election integrity reform has taken place and Trump hasn't given us a reason as to why the outcome will be any different? Doesn't it seem like Trump campaign is just playing along with a system that they believe is rigged against them, without expecting a different result and without giving a reason why the result would be any different? It's kind of the definition of insanity.
Okay. That's a pretty good question. Yeah, I mean, I have Georgia minorly fixed their laws. Wisconsin had some good decisions for Mark Zuckerberg Dropboxes, but not nearly enough has not been done. So I mean, what certainty can I give? Just one sec, guys. Come on. Okay, great. So please let us, guys. Okay, come on. The censorship's a little better than before. I can say that. We have Twitter now, and we're allowed to say what we want on Twitter. So that's one good thing. Last time we weren't able to do that. It's not X. It's Twitter.com. Okay, this whole X thing drives me crazy. I'm still not adopting it. It feels weird. The whole thing is very bizarre. Right? I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I call it Twitter, and I always will. It's like the Sears Tower in Chicago. I still call it the Sears Tower. It's not the Willis Tower. I will die on that hill, okay? Anyway, and it's like Comiskey Park in Chicago. It's not U.S. Cellular. It's Comiskey. Any Chicagoans, you know exactly what I mean, right? So censorship is better. So there's some laws in Wisconsin or Georgia better. But I think you're making a good point that they still control the voting systems, and we have not nearly reformed enough of it nor launched the proper lawsuits.
And do you think RFK has a potential to blow the whole system apart?
No. RFK has the potential to get Joe Biden another term. And I have been one of the few people that believes that RFK helps Joe Biden far more than he helps Trump. And the answer, first of all, is like if you go around this room, I bet more people have a positive opinion of RFK than a negative opinion. That's changing now that you're learning that he's a liberal Democrat and that he wants reparations, gun control, and all sorts of stuff. But with RFK, he communicates to low-trust voters. Donald Trump also communicates low-trust in government voters. So does Donald Trump. Joe Biden runs a high-trust in government-type campaign. So, RFK, at its current trajectory, could end up giving Joe Biden another term.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, not a lot of people applaud that. You shouldn't applaud that. Yeah. Yes, ma'am. We'll do a couple. We'll get through the line. Yeah.
Hello, Mr. Kirk. My name is Carly Hamlin. I want to say thank you for being here, first and foremost. At another school, the one I was at before this, I was often told that God is not real. And I even had a guest speaker come in and say that Jesus is, in fact, Satan. I've always been very firm in my faith, but many of my peers after that talk faltered in their faith. So my question is how do you stand firm against the people who try to stomp on you and twist the truth, especially about your religion?
Was that a religious school that you went to?
No.
Okay, good. That would be really something. Look, you have to be strong and courageous, as it says in Joshua 1:9, right? And one of the most important things that we as believers need to do is understand that the results are God's, but the obedience is ours. And that expressing our faith, regardless of how hard it is our moral obligation and a duty to the divine. So when someone says God is not real, honestly, you should just play with them, right? Which is you say, look, without God, there'd be no atheist. Drives them crazy, right, when you say that. And I got a lot more than that. But look, if you want to go on the atheist part of it, Augustine's proofs for God are the best. Aquinas' proofs for God are the best. But more than that, look, some people will not be won over to God just on reason alone. They have a hardened heart. They do not want to acknowledge that there is a power above them, an almighty that breathed them into existence, that they want to be God and they want to be in charge of their life, and they do not want an eternal moral standard or structure above them. So it's up for you to witness the best you possibly can. Witness with truth and love, and understand that it's not your job, you know, to win all of them over. It is your job, though, to present the truth and allow the truth to work on them, or they're going to harden their heart and reject it. Be strong in your faith. God bless you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
God bless you, too.
Hey, Charlie, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Hey, you know, I'm doing pretty good. Thank you for asking. Just to add on the debate on carbon, no matter how hard we try, we can't stop progress. And renewable energy is the future. If and when renewables such as nuclear, solar, and wind overtake fossil fuels in terms of efficiency, is the conservative movement's answer to that to try and stop that movement, or will it be to adapt?
Well, I reject the premise that it's inevitable, because experts in 1990 said all fossil fuels would be phased out by 2020, and that certainly is not the case, right? I'm glad you put in nuclear, right? A lot of environmentalists don't like nuclear, so I'm glad you like nuclear.
It's wild, isn't it?
I agree, it is wild. And so that's some common ground that we can have, right? Mm-hmm. And I think nuclear is something that is, yes, renewable. It is it can be abundant, mm-hmm. and we should embrace. But honestly, I want to say this, that if the renewable wins the market, then so be it. But do it without mass subsidies and force and coercion, right? Mm-hmm. Do it without the government coming in. And it's a clumsier fight than some mm-hmm. people realize. And the environmentalists need to be honest. I'm not saying you. I'm just going to talk more broadly, okay? If the environmentalists truly care about carbon emissions, lifting people out of poverty, and lowering utility in a quote-unquote bridge, they should be embracing liquefied natural gas. LNG is abundant. It is clean. It employs so many people. And in the state of New York, they have outlawed all LNG exploration for no other reason than ideology, right? And so do you have a comment?
Yeah. To add to the previous gentleman who was up here talking about climate change is why I came up here.
Sure.
I have an idea on how to, like, bring conservatives more into, quote-unquote, environmentalism, is to actually focus on actual conservation. Like, if you I want to say it's the Illinois River, which is completely infested. Illinois River, excuse me. It's completely infested.
I'm from the corrupt state of Illinois, okay? Sorry.
You see pollution in our cities. It doesn't take, it doesn't take a scientist to say that there is just outrageous pollution. So that's what I'm saying. Like, what is your opinion on bringing more conservatives in to, I guess, caring for the environment in the terms of conservation?
Yes, but I want to make sure the morals are always right. And it's my job to slow down mass media movements that can lead us astray. The separation between man and nature, as set out in the first 11 books of Genesis, I believe is obviously it's the truth, it's the proper way. We do not worship nature and we do not serve nature. Nature serves us. But we must try to conserve it so other people can also enjoy it, so human beings can flourish. That's an important moral statement that not every environmentalist believes. Mm. Some environmentalists believe the humans are the toxin in nature, that they are the invaders in nature. That's a really bad blow. I'm not saying it's you, right? So we have to get our morals right. But yeah, conservation, I'm all about conservation, obviously. But I'm also about when the question needs to be asked, which happens more than you might think, do we explore natural gas, fossil fuels, or coal to help people, or do we not do that to preserve some butterfly that we've never seen? Human beings must always come first. Mm-hmm. We must have a human-first agenda. And the unpopular but true argument is that fossil fuels that get demonized by every person have lifted more people out of poverty and allowed us to have a sustainable level of living that was unthinkable 200 years ago. And most environmentalists literally want what happened in Europe last winter, rolling blackouts and people freezing to death, all because of an ideological green agenda. Thank you very much. We got to wrap it up.
I liked it whenever you were on Timcast IRL.
Oh, thank you.
You had a lot of really good arguments.
Thank you. All right, last question.
Hi. My question is about the COVID vaccine.
Yes.
Haha. sorry. I personally have never gotten any of the shots ever. I'm surprised I've even made it this far. Just because of how new it is and everything. But because it's become so polarized, what would your advice be about when to trust the vaccine, say for if I have future children, especially since it is mandated in like some parts of our society?
It's a really good question. I'm by no means an expert, but I will say this. If you're a parent, you need to make an informed decision. Understand everything in life is a risk. Everything in life has a risk with it. Not vaccinating comes with a risk. Your kid could get whooping cough. That's a real risk. But also taking the Tdap vaccine comes with a risk that they won't tell you. So you have to have, and that you have to weigh both together. So I'm not going to get into that because I'm by no means an expert. But there's a lot of literature out there that has been banned and censored that makes some pretty compelling cases that there have been more adverse events to vaccines and more side effects than popular media would ever lead you to believe. What the extent of that, I do not know. But here is what I am most suspicious about from pattern recognition. The ferocity and the silencing that the pharmaceutical companies tied in with the media and the social media use to silence anybody that asks questions about vaccines is very suspicious, because it feels as if there is a profit-seeking agenda that is above actual the health of the American people or the health of our children. And I will say this, that there are way too many vaccines on the child vaccination schedule. There are way too many vaccines. Everybody needs to make their own decisions as a parent, as an individual. But when you look at you look at 75 shots that you are putting into a young baby, at some point, I know this might sound silly to some people, that should just be a gut check. And you should probably be like, that's probably too much, right? That's probably not a good idea. And that's the CDC that is pushing it. So everyone has to make their own decision. And honestly, pray to God, he'll give you wisdom. James 1:5. He'll give it to you generously. God bless you. Thank you so much.
Appreciate
it. All right. In closing, everybody, First of all, thank you for all the questions. It was great. Turning Point USA and Turning Point Action are the two most important things happening in the country. I'm very biased, but we're doing this every single night all across the country, reaching millions of people online, educating the next generation. We will lose if we surrender. We can win if we keep on fighting. Some of you came here tonight, you say, Charlie, I've done everything that's been asked of me. I knock on doors, I've run for office, I bought the pillow, I've done everything that has been asked of me. By the way, promo code Kirk at mypillow.com, just so we're clear, okay? Write it down. Write it down. You must commit tonight more than anything else that you will not allow them to break your resolve. To despair is a sin. I want you to think about that. If you are despairing, you are sinning because you are questioning the sovereignty and the plan of God. Do not despair. Your prayer should not be God save us. It should be God use me. Use me. Get to work. Fight for liberty. I love Missouri. God bless you guys. Thank you so much. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
When I grow up, I want to work for a woke company, like super woke.
When I grow up,
I want to be hired based on what I look like
rather than my skills.
I want to be judged
by my political beliefs.
I want to get promoted
based on my chromosomes.
When I grow up,
I want to be offended
by my coworkers
and walk around the office
on eggshells
and have my words policed
by HR.
Words like
grandfather,
peanut gallery,
long time no see,
no can do.
When I grow up,
I want to be obsessed with emotional safety
and do workplace sensitivity training
all day long.
When I grow up, I want to climb the corporate ladder.
Just by following the crowd.
I want to be a conformist.
I want to weaponize my pronouns. What are pronouns?
It's time to grow up and get back to work. Introducing the number one woke-free job board in America, RedBalloon.work.